Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new episode of Nightlife with Alyssa Knight. Alyssa and other Nightlife guests will explore the trichotomy of passions in Alyssa's life: cybersecurity, content creation, and entrepreneurship. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Twitter. You've been the CISO since September of 2020. You've had a string of advisory roles for companies and VC funds like YL Ventures. You've been advisor to APISec.ai, which is very near and dear to my heart in API security. VP of information security for huge companies, Palto Networks, eBay, Intuit, IBM. We could spend an entire episode talking about your career and your resume, so I won't do that. And I hate it when people give my bio right in front of me. So why don't you tell everyone who you are, who is Rinky, and we'll start from there.
Yeah, it's an honor to be on your show, Alyssa. And a little bit about me. So I was born and raised in the Bay Area. I graduated from UC Davis with a computer science engineering degree, later pursued my master's degree in information security. I've been in cybersecurity for almost two decades now. It's kind of, it flew by. Like you said, I've worked, I'm currently at Twitter. Prior to that, I was the CISO of a company called Rubrik, a cloud data management startup company in the Bay Area. I've worked at IBM, at eBay, Intuit, Palo Alto Networks.
You've definitely been to the show.
I've been around the block a few times. And held various different security roles at all these different companies. Aside from the day-to-day work, I am very passionate about bringing in more people into cybersecurity, increasing the number of women in technology, ensuring that kids have cybersecurity education. And so you'll see me involved in efforts outside of work, or using work as a platform to enable some of the initiatives in those areas. And I have two kids of my own who teach me cybersecurity lessons every day too. So that's me in a nutshell.
That's amazing. No, I'm really impressed with what you've been able to do, and also just to meet another woman in an executive leadership role, especially at a company like Twitter. So one of the things that I like to do is I try and think of the questions that my audience would want to ask you if they were sitting here in front of you. And, you know, me, which I don't really talk too much about, is, you know, my role at Quantic Bank and being in a security leadership role. I really want to ask you, when you stepped into your role at Twitter, did you decide, okay, we're going to do NIST CSF at Twitter, or we're going to do ISO 27001, or, you know, obviously you inherited some things from your predecessor. Did you end up building a brand new information security program there? Or, and if so, what framework did you choose?
Yeah. So, I'll talk about my first 90 days. I'll talk about frameworks, and then I'll tell you kind of what happened and what we've been doing. So I came into Twitter during a really interesting time, right? I came right after the security breach, but right before the US election. So it was not a time of calm. Let's go.
Chaos.
It was kind of like dig right in. Let's prepare and make sure we're serving the public conversation in a secure, protected way. And yet, like, we were still trying to come out of the breach and make sure that we remedied the things that we needed to fix within the company. And so that's what I was marching into. I was fortunate in the sense that there were a lot of investments being made in security at the time. Cool. The team did already choose to go down the ISO 27001 framework side. And so that has been something we're working through. And then as we were going through this kind of tumultuous time, if you will, we then came into the new year, into 2021. And I spent a lot of time really thinking about where the areas where we have significant gaps from a security strategy perspective, and where do we need to really uplift. And in the context of Twitter, and Twitter operates very differently and is a very different company with different challenges than prior companies I've worked at. And so really getting that in the Twitter context and building a strong security strategy ensuring that we have everything from what is our mission statement to what are the different strategic themes for the next 2 years that we're going to operate under, and what are the projects, programs, work streams that all line up to that, and what are the success metrics. And so that also all ties back in like very nicely into the ISO's 27001 framework. But that's kind of how we've been operating. The first 90 days, I've read that book, right? Your first 90 days. And it was, I had to throw that out the window. And it's kind of interesting because in previous companies I've been at, I've been able to go and really operate leveraging that book, saying like, I'm going to spend time with the executives, hear all the gaps, ensure that we have then a strategy that's built out, get board approval on it, ensure that you're meeting with all the right folks, make sure the team that works for me, that I have good relationships with them. All of that was thrown out the window here. Yeah. I didn't.
I would say life is what happens when you're planning other things, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. So I had to kind of just go with the flow, and I'm now 9-10 months in at Twitter, and we have a strategy. We've got things that are now in place.
Oh, that's exciting. Well, now it's interesting because when I was stalking you. I went through, the first part of your career, and you and I really kind of come from the same background and grew up in the industry. I'm 21 years in as well. I know they say it's dog years, but in cybersecurity, but you started as a security engineer for roughly, keep me honest here, but I believe about 12 years. And it's interesting, and you worked as a security engineer for Walmart and some really high profile brands. What was that moment where you said, you know what, I can't live in the bash shell anymore. I want to move into a CISO role. I want to move into leadership role. Or was that always the plan? Did you kind of wake up one day and said, you know what, I'm not going to do the whole interpreter shell anymore. Like, time to move on.
No. So I don't think, so let me think back. When I was an engineer, I didn't necessarily say that I want to go into management. It happened. Okay. And it happened when I was at eBay that I started building out a security culture program for eBay. I was a security engineer. I joined eBay as a security engineer, and they really needed a focus on security culture. And they were, that this is at a time where spear phishing was at a high. They were seeing some of the very early attacks as a victim when I was there. And so they started saying, we really need to focus on education for employees. And I started building out the program, and the program became so big, I couldn't do it on my own. And we just needed team members to join the team. And so without even knowing it, I hopped into a manager role.
Oh, wow.
I had to kind of learn the skills of being a manager because it's so different than being an individual contributor. Sure. And at the time, there weren't a lot of female CISOs, surprisingly enough. And so I never thought that I would be a CISO. It was more like, that seems like an interesting role. I always thought I would work for one. And that shifted for me when I started getting it more and more into leadership roles. I started really enjoying it, and I realized that I had a knack for leading people, and I loved it. And it was one of the things that brought me the most joy, because I actually did go from being an engineer to a manager, going back to being an IC, because I was I just got burnt out, and I thought, I need to focus on myself and my two little kids at home, and I can't be parenting at home and at work. So I took a step back. And they asked me to take on a leadership role again. And I realized that, I do have a knack for it. And so that's when I started seeing kind of that this might be a path for me. And it was at Palo Alto Networks that I really started aspiring that I think the next role I want to take on is a CISO role.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Yeah. I always like to ask my guests, what was that ladder? What did that ladder look like for you? And it sounds like you became an accidental CISO. You just accidental leader, just kind of fell into it. That's interesting. So I'm assuming the first thing that you did when you found yourself in a leadership role was trying to figure out all of the books you should read. Who are some of the people that inspired you? Was it the Simon Sinek's of the world and Leading with Why? Or, can you think of anyone that just kind of inspired you along the way in leadership?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I've read so many books. I love,
I'm sure.
Leading with Why is a great book. Yeah. And there's so many books I've read around that, especially around like teams and how do you build really strong teams. I love the book Sapiens. I think that has some very inspiring, just how did we all come to be and why are we the way we are? And just kind of going back into that. But what really inspired me or didn't inspire me and where I've learned the most from are other people that I've worked with and or worked for, peers of mine, leaders of mine, either doing things that I love. And I think that like those are traits that I want to copy and do the same and do that even better. Or areas where it's like, I never want to be a manager like that. I'm never going to do the things that that person did. And both are, you know, both have taught me different lessons and I believe have helped me be a better leader. And I've surrounded myself fortunately with peers and people that do give me feedback when I'm doing good things or when I'm doing things that are need to be corrected. And I try to become better through that way. And I think that's been my best way of learning is through others around me.
Well, very early on, you talked about, you know, your, when we were, you and I were talking together earlier, you talked about your work in mental health, and I think it's a really important topic. And I myself have begun getting involved in these areas of healthcare and healthcare security. One of the things I do want to touch on though, is really with the pandemic and some of the even mental health concerns that have come up as a result of the pandemic, especially people that are in an abusive home and now they're forced to shelter in place with that abusive family member. There's all kinds of issues that have sprung up as a result of the pandemic. But with your CISO hat on, how has the pandemic changed your cybersecurity program and plan, right? So, you know, you came in, obviously, like you said, you know, getting your 90-day book out and trying to follow it chapter by chapter. But then there's this pandemic, and how has that sort of changed your plan? Did it, you know, I know you mentioned having to throw it out the window, but what's different now, especially with so much of the workforce working from home?
Yeah, I have a lot to say on this topic. And so Alyssa, cut me off if I'm going too long.
Yeah, no problem. No problem.
Yeah. First of all, I went through an identity crisis of my own, when the pandemic hit, right. And I was at a company where we had to take a step back and we had to really look at like, how is the company going to survive through the pandemic? What does the pandemic mean? And if you remember back to when that moment hit, it was really scary because you didn't know how long things were going to be shut down for. Were companies still going to buy security products? All these questions. And we had to scale back a little bit. The IPO plans got delayed. And it became a time for me where because of all of that, the security program took a hit and we had to scale back on that too. And I had more free time on my hands because of that. And so then like, I'm a person where I love my work and I'm very passionate about it. And it got to a point where I went through an identity crisis and that's what led me to Twitter actually. Because I really felt like I needed to do something that where I was impacting the world in a meaningful way and that I was being challenged because otherwise I was sitting at home making, and I'm not a good, like great cook. And I was making extravagant meals for the family every day. And that was not what brought me joy and happiness. And so, I think I went through my own thing. I also was dealing with a very close family member who has schizophrenia and is bipolar. And I had to go through that during the pandemic and helping manage a very close family member who's suffered with this for decades now. But had to really work with them and like support them. And it's so, such a, thankless, very, very draining role to play a caretaker for someone that's going through that. And so I have this, I just think our system is not structured in a way to really support folks with mental health. And this pandemic only underscored that where folks were now alienated, stuck inside the home, especially folks that were alone. And when that happens, you go to work and you're more prone to be making mistakes, right? If your mental health not in the right place. And so you can call it insider threat or you can call it whatever you want, but it's folks that are internal. Are they like in a good place? Are they going to make mistakes or is their mental health going to affect their work in some way? And so that has to be baked into a security program, is thinking about that insider threat component, both from malicious insiders, but also from the accidents that might happen. So I think like you really saw an uptake of robust insider threat programs. I think also during the pandemic, it was also, how do we support hybrid environments, whether folks are at home, you're no longer dependent on the perimeter. So you saw programs take a shift. And I was actually at Rubrik and we saw many of our customers during the pandemic say like, I don't know that I want to I think we need to move faster and accelerate our movement into the cloud now, and really look at more SaaS applications and all of that. So you saw this huge shift in the way that folks were thinking about technology and enabling remote workforce, and all that got baked into the cybersecurity program as well.
Yeah. And I, one of the things that I really wanted to ask you as part of that is sort of a sub question is, in with your employees working from home, on-prem network intrusion detection and prevention maybe wasn't as important now as endpoint security. Did your security control framework change? So did you want to divert more of your budget to endpoint security agents? Before the pandemic, every CISO was like, no more agent-based anything. You know, the CTO is going to get pissed at me if I put more agents out there. No more agents. And now we're in this very disparate sort of infrastructure where people are everywhere, even more so than before. And it begs to question if there is a future for network intrusion detection prevention on-prem in the corporate network, when a lot of employees aren't even VPNing in anymore because they don't need to. And they're going directly to the internet. So did that change your budget planning and your security control framework on where you think you needed controls?
I think it not really. So what happened was, I think what happened, and this is what I'm hearing from my peers too, it wasn't necessarily that we're not going to invest in network intrusion detection, or that, and the agent story is still always the agent story, and we don't want the agents, but we have to have them. And so what happened though was this concept of zero trust. It's right. Everybody was talking about it and everybody was saying that, right? And like, it's a long journey to get there, but that's the model that we're going to follow, is a zero trust principle and all of that. What happened was plans got accelerated. So if anything, the budget got pulled forward to what can we do to accelerate our path to zero trust? How do we rely on our identity solutions in a more meaningful way as things are hybrid? How do we ensure that we're deploying a zero trust model, whether it comes to our identity or VPN on the network, whatever it is? And so that's where I think that there was a massive acceleration in getting to that zero trust, and companies that weren't thinking about that have, I think, started like putting that on the table, and that's kind of being talked about in CISO circles more and more now.
Yeah. You know, it's, I think, especially the question of what software defined networking, if there's even a future for VPNs, you know, there's all these new conversations and religious debates over these discussions about whether or not the sun is setting on certain controls in this new work environment that we're in. You know, so one of the things that I know is, and I'll end the security control talk with this question, is, you know, whether or not what your opinion is on the future of DLP, right? So cloud access security brokers, everyone's moving to the cloud. Everything's in the cloud now. Active Directory, email. There's really no reason anymore, especially with cloud drives, to even VPN into the network anymore to access anything, because everything's in the cloud anyway. Do you think traditional DLP is sort of going away? We haven't really seen any innovation here in the last decade with DLP. It's pretty much all the same main players. You know, with CASB looking more and more like DLP, I feel like it itself in itself is as experiencing an identity crisis, you know? So what do you think if you were to opine on the future of DLP and whether or not it's being replaced by CASB, what's your opinion?
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Like, I haven't heard the terminology DLP in a long time.
I know. It's like no one talks about it anymore.
No one talks about it. And I think they talk about it in the context of CASB, and even CASB, yeah. You've seen kind of like CASB solutions now be rolled up into, what do they call it? They're calling it actually just like security operations now, or cloud. Okay. I'm even seeing it labeled as asset management.
And so interesting. And now, did you know there's this new product category? I didn't even know this was a product category, but there's one called insider threat management, or ITM solutions. It's insane. Like, I've got like 11 projects open right now with security controls, and one of them is an ITM solution. I didn't even know it was a thing. Anyway, keep going. But yeah, it's funny. It's trying to figure its own name out too.
It is. And you know, so I was sitting down with a vendor and they called themselves cloud asset management or something
cloud
like
asset
that.
Management. Okay.
And it was what I understood in my words to be CASB. And I was like, oh, okay, this is like, and it that's all it was. And then they had this additional piece where they had like monitoring for your AWS and Azure and GCP and all of that too. So I was like, that's interesting. So now you've taken cloud security operations plus CASB, kind of mixed it together, and you're calling it cloud asset management. So I feel like the CASB thing is a little confused right now. It is being bundled into bigger solutions. And so you see maybe CASB might be kind of one small sliver of a company's portfolio, but that's all it is. I haven't seen like CASB only solutions anymore, even people talking about it as much.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think you've been in this just as long as me. You know that there's always like this convergence of different markets and product categories, right? We saw that with SOAR and SIEM, where everyone was saying, "Oh my God, it's only a matter of time before the SIEM platform start adding SOAR capabilities and SOAR's going to go away." And that's exactly what I'm like. But I think the same thing's kind of happening with CASB, and actually CASB even does data tagging. So it's really interesting. Like it's starting to take on these DLP like functions. Anyway, thought I'd talk about it. It's just a very interesting conversation. Anytime there's changes in product categories, and now we're seeing this in API security, and it's definitely something I want to talk about. Very near and dear to my heart is API security. With your previous work over at API security, I would love to have you weigh in on the API security threat. Like, is that what keeps you up at night? Is API breaches at Twitter, and the fact that you've got all these third parties plugging into the Twitter platform through APIs and, API keys and API tokens. And is that what's scaring you? Is your APIs, or is it something else that keeps you up at night?
It's one of the things. I think what keeps me up at night, and this has been, and this is what drives me and kind of what I'm passionate about, is just how do you embed security into the DNA of a company? And it's been the search I've been after since I started my career. And once I got a basic understanding of cybersecurity, and it's such a challenging thing that if you could get people to really own security in their hearts, you would actually have a good company, right? Because people would at least know to ask the questions on, hey, could this lead to a security issue? And I feel like with the API security piece, it's an area that can get unruly and out of control. That do you have the right testing in place, not just from a like pure InfoSec perspective, but from a business logic perspective? We've seen that what kind of things could lead to from a privacy and security perspective in terms of breaches. And then you're talking about the key management, you're talking about pen testing APIs. And so like you, it's an area of passion. It's definitely one of the things that scares me and something we need to get control over. Also, like what we're saying we do, ensuring that that is how the APIs work. And so I think there's a lot to it. And it's an amazing area with a lot of new companies emerging. It's like the new thing right now is API security. Yeah. And so I see hundreds of companies that are focusing on that right now.
Yeah, it's a real issue. And if you think about it, especially with data being worth more than oil, that's where the data is, right? And I've said this time and time before, and hackers know that that's where the data is. So they're obviously going to shift their attention to APIs. And to me, it's now the soft GUI exterior, sort of like how networks used to be 20 years ago. So what do you think is the most important thing in cybersecurity at Twitter? And then broadly in the broader industry, what's the most important thing in cybersecurity, according to Rinky?
Gosh, I think at Twitter, it's what I worry about, and this is why I took the job, is just because it gave me goosebumps when I think about it, is that Twitter's morphed, right? It started as one thing and now it's morphed to serve the public conversation. A lot of people I talk to, and even sometimes me when I'm in a hurry and don't have enough time, I get my news on Twitter. Yeah. And so it's such a mainstream kind of infrastructure now. And when you think about it in that way, anything, right, from a security perspective that could interrupt that, give people false information, that's truly what keeps me up at night. That is what I'm here to do at Twitter, is how do we protect, how do you think about Twitter as like a real critical infrastructure, and how do we protect that? How do we make sure that there's a breach couldn't lead to something that would affect the public conversation? And so to me,
you mean like false news, like fake news?
It could be like fake news, or it could be maybe like rallies occurring for the, violence or any of that kind of thing that could happen. And could a security hole or breach lead to something like that? Right. And that to me is like, and that, of course, that's an answer that's very kind of abstract, because that means you need to really secure the platform in many different areas to ensure that that kind of thing doesn't happen. But that's the end goal. I mean, that's what, ensuring that the public conversation is always protected and there's no security holes that would lead to anything but a solid, you know, a secure public conversation. That's what I care about. That's why I'm here. And I think that's the most important thing, at least for us here at Twitter. And so when you think about, I think, the world as a whole and kind of what the security things that are happening right now, like we've just seen, I mean, you and I are on Twitter. And so we've seen so many people be affected by ransomware, right? And infrastructure being taken down. And so I think, you know, when you go back to what's the fundamental, and I always talk about the not sexy things in security are, and a lot of times you want to go and have quick wins as a CISO because
you're
yourself in a new company. But when you think about the non-sexy things in security, backup recovery, it's like basics, right?
Disaster
recovery, crisis response plan. When you think about asset management, vulnerability management, getting some solid, you know, things, that's it. But it's when I think about it, it's like, I really don't want critical infrastructure to come down because that has a meaningful impact in a bad way for the world. And so I think those are the kinds of things that are running through my head is how do we ensure that that's baked in early on in companies' programs, because you're just not seeing the right investments being made, I think, early on until something like this happens. And then you see significant investments happen.
In that vein, if you could do one thing differently, if you had a chance to go on a time machine, go over one thing and change your decision, what would it be at Twitter? If you go back in time and do one thing all over again, what would it be?
Gosh,
we get very deep on this show. That's I mean, if you like it, because it's been you're coming on almost a year. Yeah, is there one decision you would have made differently?
You know, I always talk about taking big risks. I came into Twitter and they brought me on board because we were going to make massive change in kind of how security was being thought of and like where security should be placed, which we've done. I wish that there was so much going on, as I mentioned earlier in the show, that there was so much going on. There's so much chaos happening in the world at Twitter with like all the things we were facing. I wish I had taken a firmer stance in saying, we're going to slow down for a minute. Like we're going to slow down and really look at the program. And the reason I say that is because I feel like it took us a little bit longer to get to the strategy than I would have hoped. And the reason for that is so pulled on into the chaos, right? And so in the chaos I'm talking about is what was happening in the world, what was happening at Twitter behind the breach, also the planning process at Twitter to get budget and all those things. And it would have been perfectly fine, I think, for me to come in and I would have gotten all the support in the world to say that I'm not getting involved in anything right now. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to observe. I need some time to, you know, really think about how the strategy, and I think I would have been maybe 3 to 6 months sooner in having that strategy done. You know, is it a big thing? Maybe not, but in the grand scheme of things, we're still in a good place now, but that's the one thing I think I would have done differently.
I think you and I are definitely the same in that regard, because I'm a big believer in Abraham Lincoln's, if you had 8 hours to cut down a tree, I'd spend 6 hours sharpening my axe. And I think we as practitioners tend to want to immediately go to being a tactician, and the strategy is so important, and, you know, the planning around that and creating the plan and trusting the process is so important. So on the topic of jumping in a time machine, if you could go back and talk to a 21-year-old Rinky, what would you tell her?
I would tell her, take bigger risks. There's definitely, you are going to see women role models and leaders in the cybersecurity space. And I think those would be the two biggest things I'd tell my younger self, because when I look back, there was a time I almost left the workforce. And I'm so grateful that I didn't and somehow stayed in, but there was a time I almost left because it wasn't, InfoSec and tech just wasn't built for women and women who wanted families and things like that. And I didn't have a lot of role models in cybersecurity that I saw have successful careers at the time. And so I, you know, those are the two main things. And I hope women now just, they don't see barriers and they see more leaders around them. And, you know, I know we have a lot more work to do in that regard, but still, I think it's much, things are a lot better now than they were back then.
Yeah, that's a good point and a great answer. You know, one of the things that I feel just in looking at your career and how successful you are and what you're continuing to do as a change maker, you know, I feel like you've definitely, you're the CISO of Twitter. You know, I'm sure you've reported to different people within different organizations. Is there anything above that? Like you've, it feels like you've made it all the way to the top. What's next for Rinky? Like what's bigger than, you know, what's that next big thing that's bigger than being the CISO for Twitter?
That's, you know, it's so funny. My cousin was asking me the same thing. Like, where do you go after this? Like,
you've
what
officially
is
made it.
Yeah, like you're going to spend the rest of your life at Twitter. Right. And I said, maybe I will. One of the dreams that I've had, and we'll see, you know, there's got to be the right time and place for it, but, and maybe this is every Bay Area kid's dream, is to have a company of my own, maybe in cybersecurity, maybe something in tech. And so if anything, I think after Twitter, it would be something like that, is to
be
a co-founder of a tech company of some sort. But it's pretty sweet being in this role here. You know, sometimes I have to pinch myself. And as I mentioned to you, today was the day our San Francisco office opened. And so I just made it back, and it's kind of unreal. Just again, feeling now like being physically here in this space and feeling what it's like to be a Twitter employee. So who knows, maybe I will be here for a really long time.
Well, you're a big deal. You've been a big deal. And this has been amazing spending this time with you. I do want to part with one question, because this is, it's almost a religious debate, and it's something that you see talked about on Twitter, on LinkedIn. What is the right reporting structure for a CISO? Do you report directly to Jack, or, you know, do you report to someone else? And in your experience and in being in so many leadership roles, and the importance of security in it transitioning from being a technology problem to a boardroom problem, according to Rinky, what is that perfect reporting structure for a CISO?
Yeah, it's so interesting, right? Because there still isn't a guidebook to this. Every company does it in their own way. And I think one of the big reasons for that, it's kind of an afterthought still. It's not being baked in from the beginning. And so I've seen more companies now where the CISO sits with the CEO. I report to a chief risk officer. And who reports to Jack. So I'm two layers below Jack. My peers include IT, trust and safety, and many other functions, our customer
privacy,
support,
stuff like that.
Privacy, yeah. Engineering, right? So there's a huge function. I have information security for the whole company, everything from it, the production side of the house to IT security. I've got the whole bundle. And so I think CEO is an amazing place for a CISO. It's happening, but not happening widely. I've also seen it work really well under the CFO in certain companies.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because CFOs are risk averse, and it matches really well with security, because security is also a risk, you know, risk averse function. And so like investing in security in the right ways, I think that could be very interesting. My strong opinion on this is CIOs are not the right place for security to report to, because there's a conflict of interest there, right? CIOs are focused on enablement and availability. And when you have security, sometimes can play against enablement and availability. Sure. You're making a choice on one versus the other. So I don't believe that's the best place. In fact, what's really interesting is I've seen several companies now where IT falls under the CISO, or the CIO reports to the CISO, which I think is a very cool model.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And then CTOs, I think it depends what kind of CTO. If it's a CTO that has broad coverage and can really be lead security and have kind of a lens where you don't have that conflict of interest, I think it could be good. But many times, even on the CTO side, there's a conflict there. General counsel or legal can be a really good place for CISOs. Oh, yeah. So I've seen that work really well in my past to it and into it, the security team rolled up under the legal organization. So that's kind of, legal and finance are a good place if CEO is not an option.
Yeah, it's interesting. I even saw, I think one of the most interesting reporting structures I've seen before was where the CISO actually reported to the audit committee, which was really interesting. But I agree. I think the CFO reporting structure, or even CEO, obviously the best. But look, you continue to be an inspiration to me and many other women out there. I love your voice and the influence that you offer and your tweets and the things that you're involved in. You have to promise me you'll be a guest on this show again. And just want to say thank you for everything you've done.
No, thank you too. I think you inspire many other women to come into cybersecurity. Thank you for having me on your show. And yes, I promise I'll do it again with you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Nightlife on ITSP Magazine with Alyssa Knight. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share itspmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.